Well, good morning to you. I got to look around here for just a second. It's a pretty big group this morning. I've already dropped the mic once on the floor, so I'm hoping it works the whole time I'm here. Now, I'm looking at this audience. I need to ask this question. I know it's spring break coming up next week, so I need to know what you're doing. How many of you are going on a go trip? Raise your hand if you're going on a go trip. Wow. And that's all over the country. Anybody going out of the country on a go trip? Where are you going? Tomorrow? Okay, so she's sitting in Union in a green chair today. She's going to Africa tomorrow. That's her perspective. How many of you are just going home? You're just taking it easy, going home. All right, now let me ask this question. How many of you have a test later on in the day? Anybody? How many of you have brought some of your work to do in this hour? Yes. Let me tell you something. I attended university 10 years ago. Actually, I graduated in 1994. But I did some of my best working in this facility right here. I'm telling, I got some work done right now. Now, this is an exciting day for you guys. No matter what, if you've got tests or work or you've got a lot of stuff to do, you're getting out. You're going home. You're taking a break. And that's something you need to be excited about. When I was driving here last night, I got to tell you a couple things before I get started. I just cannot believe the way this place looks. How many of y'all are from Jackson originally? Anybody in here? That's a good number. Y'all know how much, you people who've been lived in Jackson all your life, you know how much this area has changed. It's really kind of bizarre. It's like all these people brought metal and wood and bricks and mortar and dropped it right out there, and it just exploded into every possible business, restaurant, shopping mall, theater that you can imagine. And then you keep going, and you get off 80, exit 80, and you come toward the Union campus, and you see all these huge buildings that were not here when I went to school. And I think the last time I was in chapel with you guys, the bell tower was the new addition to the campus. And I still hold this to be true, okay? Now listen to this truth. Any campus that has a bell tower, I could be a scholar on that campus. I don't know what it is about a bell tower. It's like it says to the world, we know the time. We can keep the time. We ring things when the time changes. It's something about it that just says we're here and we're important. So if you haven't thought about your bell tower today, I want you to at some point. But in addition to that, there's this huge building out back. It's I think it's called, what, Jennings? Is that right? It's got classrooms in it. I'm telling you the truth. I think when I attended here that I had a couple of classes in a maintenance shed, and I'm not lying to you. I don't know if there is a maintenance shed, but I'm pretty sure I took some classes in there. And I don't know if I should be bitter about this, that you guys go to this grand facility every day and take classes, or whether I should feel glad for you. And what makes me even more conflicted is that I'm here today to kind of talk about Jesus, and I'm feeling bitter party of one over it. But in addition to the Jennings building, okay, you've got all of these new things that are going on out in the hallways. And after this is over, if I walked down that hallway right there and took a right where the lunchroom used to be, I would see biology labs, chemistry labs. So basically, people are cutting open animals where I used to eat. And I'm serious. I don't know what I think about that either. But you know what I got to tell? This is the one constant, and this is true. The one constant at Union University is this room right here. I want you to look around. Nothing has changed in this room. Now, I know they've added maybe a coat of paint, but this room looks identical to what it looked like when I attended here. Same chairs. I think they're different colors, maybe. They're different chairs, but they look a lot the same. Union might be a little bit more advanced than I thought, but it's the same structure, so go with me there. And the sound booth was back there, and I did listen enough in chapel to know when I attended Union University that this pipe organ right here was something special. It was either the biggest or the most expensive or the shiniest, but it was something that made it extraordinary. It was kind of like our bell tower, except it was in here, not out there. It was something that was important. And there's something about this room that speaks to me of my experience here at Union because it was so similar. And I'm going to tell you something right now that might actually change where you sit in this chapel for the rest of your life. In fact, I'm looking to see who is actually seated. I think you are. Blue shirt right there. What's your name? Yes. Emily, I got something sad to tell you. Y'all see where Emily see? Y'all can't see her over here, can you? But right here in this section, I got to tell something. used to have a pack mentality at Union. I don't know whether you guys travel in packs, but we did. Everybody meet the lunchroom, and then you just go from there. Well, this particular day, we had met, and we were all coming to chapel, so we came down. I'm not sure why we were sitting this close to the front, but we were. I'm glad you did, too. So we sit there, and I got a friend that's with me. His name is Bubba. Bubba Wright. And he was from Mississippi originally, which kind of goes together, Bubba and Mississippi. But he had, like, gone to high school with me, and then he'd moved away somewhere real far in, like, Montana. And then he'd come back to be at Union at the same time I was. So we had all come together to chapel, and we pulled our books out. We're getting ready to get our work done. And the singer had just, you know, done the special, and the speaker gotten up. And I don't know whether I can explain to you what happened next other than just to say that Bubba threw up. And I don't mean just a little bit. It was projectile vomit. And Emily, right, Emily? It was in that chair. And so it was so bad that my friend, other friend that was with me, you know, in the 80s and 90s, we used to wear these jeans and put patches on them because we thought that looked cool. My friend Mary thought that was just wearing a really cool paisley patch on his jeans when he got up. It was throw up. Now listen, you know you don't want to throw up in anywhere where people are, but you don't want to throw up in a chapel with 1,000 people either. It was a fantastic experience. So I don't know whether they cleaned that section. You might want to get your hand sanitizer out. I don't know. But that's what happened right there. And I've said all this basically this morning to set up this idea that everything you're doing here, every moment you spend, every time you walk down this hallway or go into a classroom, you are developing a set of memories. And those memories are happening constantly. And it becomes a memory bank that you take away from this facility. Wherever you are and wherever you go in life, you'll take this memory bank with you of things that you've done. And what's interesting is that most of those memories, you think about it right now in your brain. I don't care if you've been here 6 months or 6 years. But most of those memories in your brain right now, of your experiences here, center around people, not buildings, not classes, not huge bell towers. They center around. Who was that? Fantastic. That's another hand sanitizer moment right there. She'll remember that forever. But your memories center around people. They have to. Your memories are about the people that you are engaging with every second of the day. Look beside you right now. Both sides. Please raise your hand if you have come into the chapel with the person seated next to you. Anybody? Okay, now, keep your hands up. How many of you have come to chapel with the person seated next to you? Okay, if you have just met them since your time at Union, keep your hand up. Okay, that's a lot of people. Put your hands down. Next question, and I need you to respond to this honestly. Please don't lie for the sake of being in chapel. Nobody's here that's going to accuse you of that. But I need to know how many of you right now feel like the experience that you've had interpersonally with other people, the people you've met at Union, how many of you feel like it's been a positive experience? Wow, keep your hands up. I know I'm exercising you today. If there are faculty and folks in this room, I want you to look around at that answer. Okay, put your hands down. Let me tell you something. That is a powerful response, and I'm going to say why. Because I think one of the greatest goals of education, one of the most important things that education actually does for an individual, is it teaches you to operate in and amongst a community of human beings. And that education is happening 24/7, not Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You are having to learn to work with people who are not like you. Most of them come from different backgrounds. They have diversity in their life. They come from family backgrounds that you've never known or understand. You are put together in a room with people you've never met before, and you're asked to live with them. It's an amazing transition that's happening in your world right now. And mostly, this collegiate moment is allowing you the ability to work out your interpersonal problems. How well you communicate with others and effectively develop relationships will walk with you the rest of your life. It is a powerful thing that you're learning right now. And I don't mean to slight the academic world at all. I mean, I'm a part of that. But there is something, in fact, when my students leave my classroom, they're not going to always need to know who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird. Even though I love Atticus Finch and Harper Lee. But they're not going to always need to know that information. But I know when they walk out of my door, they're going to always need to know how to communicate and have positive, healthy relationships. It is a certainty in your world. And what's amazing about that truth is that we have to really begin to develop the right attitudes towards each other. And our culture makes it harder to do that. With the advent of internet and the information highway, cell phones, the latest craze in my classroom is text messaging. My students are so good at it, they can put their hands in their pocket, text message to someone else in another classroom, and look at me and act like they're right there with me the whole time. It's amazing. But what I say to them is, why would you text message someone when you're holding a phone? I don't know. I still don't know the answer to that question. But ultimately, all of these items of technology keep us from looking each other face to face and interacting in a way that God has intended us to interact. No matter what technology does, and no matter how advanced it becomes, however, there will always be a moment where you have got to be able to communicate on that level with someone else. Whether it's just handing over a dollar at the store to get your Coke, or whether it's standing at an altar and handing a ring to someone else and saying, I will dedicate my life to you for the rest of my days. Ladies and gentlemen, the relationships that you are establishing right now and the ones that you have in this facility, whether they're dating or friendship, those relationships are so powerful. And what you're learning to do is you're learning to negotiate them according to the way God's called us to. It's so funny, though, as believers, this is kind of sad. We tend to compartmentalize ourselves, our faith, so much. A great example of this, some of y'all's churches actually may have been involved here, so I'm not going to mention any names, but over the weekend in Murfreesboro, there was a huge, like, youth evangelism going on. Does anybody's churches go to that? You know what I'm talking about? Can I have my water real quick? In Murfreesboro, there was this unbelievable gathering of churches. Hold on a second. Now, this whole huge gathering of churches came all over Tennessee. And my husband and I decided to go eat lunch on Saturday at 12:30 in Murfreesboro. And they had let every one of these folks out. And they had said, you got from 12 to 1 to eat. I'm talking thousands of people in Murphy Center. And they just hit the strip at Murfreesboro. They went to every restaurant they could possibly climb into. So my husband and I decided to go to Pizza Hut, and we walk in on a scene. I mean, it looks like the whole restaurant has had a tornado hit it. And when we see there are two, a man and a woman, standing at the cashier, this young girl, high school girl that works there all the time, and they're saying to her, basically, not very in a kind way, they're saying, you have not gotten our food to us in a timely manner, and we are upset by that. So my husband and I sit there and listen, and they're wearing their such-and-such Baptist church sweatshirts, and they're talking to this girl, and the conversation begins to escalate. And then all of a sudden, what happens is this woman yells at this girl. Now listen to me carefully. She yells this. You are going to make me miss my meeting at 1 o'clock if you do not get my food to me right now. And I thought to myself, you know what? That's right. You're going to miss your meeting about Jesus Christ while you're treating this woman like you don't know her. Him. Her. Him. Boy, that would be a theological problem. Y'all are going to be talking about me about heresy today. Literally, think about that. In this moment, I'm sitting here saying, why have you valued your relationship with these 40 kids waiting on you in the van, but you do not value this interaction with this young woman at the register? Now, don't get me wrong. I've laid out a lot of good people in my life who've done nothing to me for no reason whatsoever. And if you've done that, believe me, I understand. But the ultimate goal of our understanding of God and His impact in our life and when Christ comes in and changes that heart is that every interaction would be different. Every one of them. I got a great friend at school who teaches drama. She's crazy as a loon. Her name is Libby Swink. I love her. Miss Swank's what we call her. And she talks like this. Everything's like this. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. One day I'm talking to her on a cell phone and she's driving out of her driveway. I'm talking with her. And she stops me and she says, now wait one second, I got to wave to my trash man, hold on. And I hear her go, hi! Oh, you know what? That's why people love this woman. because her trash man and me have equal status. As we should. Ladies and gentlemen, somehow we think of ourselves as believers, and many of you in this room would probably raise your hand if I asked you to, that you're following Christ and you're seeking His face and you're getting down on your knees and you're trying to be the person that He's calling you to be. Many of you would say that, and I would say that. But we've got this idea that we treat people inside of Christendom a different way than we treat people outside of Christendom. And it shouldn't be that way. Every interaction, everyone should be touched by the hand of God. My question to you before I move on is, so how are you doing in this community? If you look around at these people, you may not know all of them and their names, but I'm telling you right now, you can't escape these people. You may try, but you're going to walk down this hallway and see them every day. You're going to go to the lunchroom and see them. You're going to see them when you go out into the ball fields and play and do the things you're doing. These are people you cannot escape. How are you doing in your community? How are you doing in your 6 feet of space? The lives that your hand touches. What are you communicating to everybody that you interact with? Are you hurt? Are you jaded? Are you happy? Are you outgoing? Are you withdrawn? What are you? And how do people perceive that in your relationship world? The other day in my junior class, I asked this question. Write one thing down you do not understand about the opposite sex. The first thing out of their mouth is one thing? How about 70? They don't talk like that, but I just thought I'd give that impression. So they wrote it down, and then we went around the room, and everybody said theirs aloud. And I just kind of took my hands off the discussion because I wanted to prove a point. It much degenerated into a fight. Because as soon as someone would say, well, let's don't express themselves, then somebody would be like, yeah, I do. You just don't listen. And then they just got into it. And so I was like, wow, this is volatile and kind of exciting. But you know what? I was kind of hoping a fight would break out. It would be interesting. But you know, this is true. I looked around the room, and every single soul in that room, every one of them, all 29 of those precious souls that are probably text messaging each other right now, every one of those souls was listening to me and each other. They were engaged. They weren't bored. They weren't asleep. They weren't doing their work in other classes. They weren't stagnant. You want to know why? Because you can't be neutral about relationships. You can't be ambivalent when it comes to how you relate with other people. You can't not discuss it because it happens to you constantly. Your interaction with people is your life. It's not just a side event. And these students were ready to plug into that conversation. And you know what we discovered? There was no resolution to that question. And I'm sure you've discovered as collegiate students that it gets even worse as you get older. But the question of relationships is what brought us to that point. So if we know that we need the relationships around us and we understand that they're important and significant, I need to know why it's so hard for us to maintain positive, healthy ones. There's a new survey out right now that says, in your lifetime that you will amass 363 friends. That doesn't really seem like that much to you, does that, to you? 363. I don't know where they came up with that number. They probably just made it up to sound good, but 363 friends. You know what they say about that? Only 6 of them you'll call true. In fact, they said at any given time in your life, if you stop for a second and take stock of the things around you, the people around you, that you can probably count 30 people in your direct sphere of influence at any given time. Only 6 of them you'll tell your secrets to. Why is that true? Why is that true? Why do we withdraw so much and protect ourselves so much that we would only have 6 or fewer friends that we would tell our secrets to in our life? You want to know why? Because we understand the power of relationship. And if you've been in one, whether it's with a friend or a girlfriend or boyfriend, you know this, that you can get the joy and excitement out of that relationship, and you can get the most pain too. Woo! I'm not going to ask you, but if I said to you how many in this room have been hurt by the opposite sex in a relationship, how many of you in this room have been hurt by a friend and betrayed, some of you are raising your hands anyway, you would definitely respond. We understand that pain, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why that number is so small. What's amazing about it is that the one common factor we all have is our humanity, and the great irony, it is that humanity that oftentimes drives us apart. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a sad, sad thing when we allow ourselves to become jaded by that truth. What I'm going to tell you today, really quickly, are three reasons why I think it's hard to maintain relationships, and hopefully some things we can do about them. 2-year-old little sister, half-sister, she's not 2 anymore, she's 10. Actually, I told you the wrong number. She's 10 now, but when she was 2 years old, I went home for a holiday. I know you're thinking in your mind, you're like 70, and you have a 10-year-old sister. But that's a whole other story. Anyway, I have a young sister, and I went home for a holiday, and there was like a decorative Christmas plate on the table. And they had told her specifically, do not touch the Christmas plate. So the parents left the room. Samantha went right for the plate. Picked it up. Well, being the parental figure that I am, I said to her, no, Samantha, put the plate down. No. So I walk over to her. I grab the plate. And then I find myself in a tug of war with a 2-year-old. And I think to myself, why am I doing this? And then what becomes even grander, a grander truth, is that I realized that nobody sat Samantha down at the age of 1 and said, you know what, Samantha, one day they're going to try to get your plates, girl, and you just hold on as hard as you can. You hold on, girl, don't you let go. They didn't say that to her. You know what? They didn't have to teach her to do that. When you signed up for your classes this spring, they're not offering selfishness 101. We do that naturally. You, no one taught you how to lie or how to deceive people or how to put on a front. We do it like it's water coming out of a faucet. You want to know why? Because it's our nature. My kids complain all the time about rules. Why do we have that rule? Why is it always don't? Somebody's got to say no to us. Somebody's got to say no to us. Because we are about self-protection at any cost. And if you think you're not, please look in the mirror. We all are. And we do it constantly. I asked the same junior class on a survey 3 months ago, what kind of things end relationships? Out of 52 students polled, 50% of them said one word, betrayal. Out of one class of 29, 25 of them wrote down on the piece of paper without cheating, and this is rare, they wrote the word betrayal. And some of them added in for good measure backstabbing and lying. They're 16, but they've lived long enough to know that's the truth. Our human nature is real, ladies and gentlemen, and it's one of the things that teaches me the truth that God exists, because I need Him. I've got to have Him. I've got to have Him. And He's got to change my relationship. So my thing to you today is to say this. Every day you wake up in a relationship, whether it be with a boy or a girl or a friendship, you got to say no to yourself. Every day. And Jesus Christ teaches us that truth on the cross. Proverbs 11:13 says, a gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps the secret. Proverbs 16:28 says, a perverse man stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. Why would God spend so much time in the book of Proverbs telling us things that are basically self-evident? Why would He do that? I read that verse and I say, yeah, that's true. I can get that. Well, He does it for the same reason that all of us will have 6 close friends and no more. Because we are sinful and we need Jesus Christ to change our relationships and every interaction we have. Number 2, we take the significance of people for granted until we're painfully reminded. I have a great friend named Mary Bowman that I met here at school, and she lives in my area now. And when Mary was in the 7th grade, she was really awkward and kind of ugly and, you know, kind of like the outcast girl. And she was in a middle school, and I'm laughing at that, I don't know why, but she was in a middle school math class. And there was a really popular girl in that class, okay? And they were giving their test back for that day, and this girl who's really popular, she got her test score back, and it was real low, and she was just incredulous. She was like, oh, my word, look at my score. And so she looked around at people around her, and she said, what did you make? What did you make? What did you make? And she turned around to Mary, who was a couple of rows back from her, and she looked at her, and she said, what did you make? And Mary said in that moment, she went, oh, my gosh, the popular girl just asked me what I made on my test. And before she could open up her mouth to respond, the girl looked at her and said, oh, it doesn't matter. My friend is 33 years old, and she remembers that moment like it was yesterday. It was the 7th grade. Now, we can laugh about it now, but what's honest is, if I went around this room and I asked you what's on your tape recorder, everybody in this room would tell me that there's been something negative that's been said to you. Someone has tried to speak a lie into your life, and it might have become the truth. I don't know. but it plays constantly in your head over and over and over again. I don't know what it is, but you've got something on your tape recorder that plays in your head. But that's not the question I want to ask today. I want to ask whose tape recorder you're filling up. See, we take people for granted constantly. Their significance and their power. Look right again at the people next to you just for a second. You don't have to say anything to them. Just look at them. Sometimes we just think they're flesh and blood. And we forget that inside of them is a soul that is eternal. And that they take things that we say and it shapes them. It makes them different. Sometimes in a positive way. And ladies and gentlemen, sometimes in a negative way. And I don't know what's on your tape recorder, but I can guarantee you it'll be there when you're 33. You might be laughing about it then, but it'll be there. What I'm asking you is to take for absolute certainty that every day you open your mouth in an interaction with someone in a deep relationship, you're changing their life forever. Lastly, we do not understand that relationships are God-mandated. Not only are they God-mandated, but they're God-constructed. What's interesting about relationships is that God is the very author of the idea. It is by relationship that we even are able to exist with Him again and re-enter the kingdom of heaven. It's His idea. He came up with it. And the world wants to act like they've got the market on it. My kids watch these shows called, one of them's called Cribs. One of them's called The Fabulous Life Of. Another one's called It's Good to Be. And you kind of substitute a rich celebrity in there. Any of you seen those shows or know what I'm talking about? They watch them all the time. And I say, you know, basically those shows are here to tell us how poor we are. That's what they're all about. But ultimately, what this does, this kind of programming reinforces the truth, okay, that money is non-negotiable. Your bank account is non-negotiable, and relationships are expendable. We put celebrities on a pedestal and watch their relationships expire in 7 seconds, and then we wonder why our culture doesn't value them. We wonder why we don't see any real truth in who we all are and that our souls are eternal. We put people together on shows called Bachelor and say, get married in 2 minutes and make it last. We make relationships a joke. And then we wonder why our young children don't understand their significance. It's amazing to me. And what God does in His Word is He flips that back up, right side up, and He says, no. They're not a joke. They're not secondary. They're not expendable. You don't get to just say, when I'm done with you, someone will take your place. He says, God has established relationships because that is what He believes makes us whole. And He understands that if we accept that relationship with His Son and that sacrifice, that we see Him again. Ladies and gentlemen, whoever you're sitting by today is not just a piece of flesh and blood with nice skin and veins. They are someone who you are impacting in an eternal way forever and ever. I want to ask you this question as I close today. What, can you imagine what would happen in this room? Just in this room. I'm not talking about the world. What would happen in this room if we really understood the truth of how significant we are in God? How would this community change today? I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that wherever you're going on your go trip would be different too. I can tell you that right now. So today I want you to hold on to the truth that you are powerful people and that your relationships are powerful connections. And without them, we don't understand who God is nor why He wants us back. Pray with me. Father, thank You so much for this time, and thank You for allowing me to be here today. Lord, these students are so precious in Your sight, and they're worried, they're stressed, they got tests, they've got a lot of work on their shoulders. And oftentimes in the midst of all that, they can't think about anything that's even closely related to relationships or treating people better. But I pray You'd help us do that today, that we would take each other and we would lift each other up and encourage each other in a way that makes a difference. We thank You, Father God. It's in Your name we pray. Amen.